Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I do interviews with experts. I share stories both about the things that worked, but also my big epic fails that I've made as well. I share ideas and blueprints and strategies. And it's all because I ultimately believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And a lot of what we've focused on this idea of creativity and learning is what it means to do this in a vastly changing world. And so we've been talking a lot lately on this podcast about the topic of AI, how it's changing learning. And I just want to tell you ahead of time that next week I will be doing a series of 4 interview podcasts, maybe 5, we'll see, with experts who have different areas of expertise related to AI and education. I'm super excited about it. And along that same note, I am working right now. I actually just finished my first draft on a book that's all about what it means to do authentic, creative learning in a world of smart machines and AI. So look for that at some point in the upcoming months. I don't have a release date yet, but I'm super excited about that. So today we're going to be talking about this topic of what personalized learning might look like in an age of AI. And I want to share with you 2 different concepts or plans, 2 different approaches of what that might look like. And we're going to begin with a story from when I taught middle school. Starts to hit. 8 students stood in line, whispering to one another and fidgeting in excitement. A few of them had peeked into the windows to see what was new. One girl had a tiny notebook with a list. Most of the students had pulled out their phones to check on the new key information that had been released. There was a buzz in the air that settled into an intense, quiet excitement. But this wasn't a concert or a line to buy a smartphone or the front gate of a sporting event. This was our first assigned library day of the school year. Being new to the school, I wasn't sure what to expect. I'd heard that they did a really good job keeping reading fun and that our library was the epicenter of this excitement around reading, but still, this shocked me. A boy walked up to me and asked, "What are you going to get?" "Oh, I already have a book I'm reading," I answered. He shook his head. "Nah, Spencer, you're going to get something. Everyone leaves with at least 2 books, but no more than 4. "Is that a rule?" I asked. He laughed at the ridiculousness of the question. The rule? It was like making a rule that you have to eat at a buffet or making a rule that you have to have dessert. No, this wasn't a rule. It was just the way things were done around here. Right then, the librarian opened the door and the students streamed in quietly. Just kidding. No, it was loud. It was really loud. They scurried from display to display, reading back the back of book covers and debating books and getting into little arguments, criticizing each other's tastes in novels in the way that is so essentially junior high. Our librarian seemed to embrace the noise and chaos as she called out specific books and named specific kids. "Carlos, you'll love this one," she yelled from across the library. Some of the students had been checking out books all summer, but she still built up suspense through the use of release dates, books that would only be available in the first week of school. The cynical side of me would have scoffed at middle school students getting excited about reading books. After all, there's this cultural perception, or maybe more of a misperception, that reading is inherently uncool. As a child of the 1980s, I always felt like those Read posters, I don't know if you remember them, it had Read in big block letters, and usually there was like Mr. T or Michael J. Fox, and you know, that was like, "Hey, you should read." I always felt like those kind of backfired. It was like the ad council was trying too hard with advertising reading. It made reading seem important and necessary, but not really, well, fun. After all, we didn't need signs imploring us to go play or to goof off or to play video games. But anyway, my cynicism that I might have felt going into this day began to melt as I watched the sincerity of my students. They were pulling out their phones and reading QR codes to get book reviews. They debated the merits of various series and on occasion, like I said, mocked others for the choice of their books, something that I would address in our first whole class meeting. But really, it all came down to this. The library was like a candy store. And my students were beyond excited to be there. At one point, the librarian called students to an open space and reminded them of some of the strategies for finding the right books. She talked about reading sample pages, checking out the synopsis on the back of the book, checking any 3-star Amazon reviews, which she explained often would provide a more measured review of both the pros and the cons of the book, and even looking at the book covers to see who they were marketing it toward. I mean, it was bizarre, but she actually told students to go judge a book by its cover. This library experience defied the stereotypes of the stodgy, quiet library. However, I'd argue that many school librarians have designed similar environments because librarians as a whole are finding innovative ways to get students excited about reading. Looking back at it, our school librarian was a leader of an empowered community. She was a true expert in reading and curation, media literacy, and library science. But she never presented herself as the sole expert in reading. She wasn't a gatekeeper, if that makes sense. Instead, she built relationships with students and worked with them to find texts that would connect with their interests and the desires and personalities and life stories. As a true curator, she read a broad variety of books and constantly explored new authors and genres with the hopes of helping students fall in love with reading. She was also a master architect who designed this whole system to help kids fall in love with reading. She coordinated author visits and worked with teams of students to do book talks and book preview videos. In other words, she designed the ecosystem of reading that would allow me as a teacher to build a classroom culture of empowered readers. And this was a reminder of the power of authentic, personalized learning. So what do we mean by personalized learning? That's vision number one of personalized learning. But there's a second vision, and it looks a little bit like this second story that I'm going to share. Again, from back when I taught middle school. Here's the booklet. It tells you exactly what to do to help students get into their reading intervention software. Everything should stay inside the program. It's cloud-based, but it's all been downloaded, which means they really can't go into the internet even if they tried, the district representative explained to me. Okay, so what do? I asked. Walk around, monitor. If you have any questions, they'll raise their hands and you can answer them, he explains. But what about the discussions? No, it's personalized. There are no discussions, he said. No literary circles, I asked. No, it's fully individual. They do targeted intervention based on skill practice, and this is where adaptive learning is right now. That means they'll get vocabulary practice and reading intervention work that targets their key deficiencies. You don't have to do any assessment. I mean, yes, once a week you'll read the printout and talk to them about their goals, but it's driven by the adaptive learning software. You'll get the data on how they master every single standard. You'll get a fluency score. And as they move up to higher reading levels, they'll get badges. And what do? I asked again. Just monitor them, he says. It's honestly the easiest class you'll ever teach. This is the future of reading intervention. Personalized learning is finally a reality. As I implemented the program, I couldn't help but feel that personalized was the wrong word for it. If anything, it felt impersonal. Students sat at computers doing digital worksheets meant to teach everything from phonics and blending to reading comprehension. They wore headphones as I walked around the different rows and kept them on track. This was the first glimpse of adaptive learning fueled by AI. A series of cryptic algorithms set the tone and the pace of learning, and all I did was sit back and watch. Nuclear family. 3 weeks later, I approached the principal with a new idea. After nearly a semester of this adaptive learning program with both the previous teacher and myself, students weren't really reaching their goals. They were bored and frustrated. So I pitched a different idea. We would head out to the library every single week and we would choose books. Students would read silently each day and build up their reading endurance. We would use recommendations from algorithms like Amazon, but also lean heavily on our amazing librarian. We would form lit circles and do read alouds, but we would also do 5 minutes of adaptive learning in the form of the fluency work. We would still use that program, but just for one key skill practice. We wouldn't avoid AI, but we wouldn't let the machine drive the learning. Instead, we would focus on the human connection. 4 weeks later, we compared this blended approach to the adaptive learning program. It turned out our students had higher reading scores. And that's because those in the traditional reading intervention class, the one that used solely the adaptive learning program, well, they did pretty well in the beginning, but they didn't have reading endurance. In other words, my students continued to do really well throughout the test because they could read for a longer amount of time. By focusing on motivation and building up reading endurance, students improved. They were more excited about what they read. And by engaging in meaningful discussion centered on critical thinking, students also improved in their overall reading comprehension. Now, I want to be clear. I would never claim that adaptive learning programs don't work, right? So if adaptive learning is what I described in the second story, it can work. It does have its place. And I would also not make any claim that my experience was normative. Every context is different. But I share this story as a reminder that personalized learning has to begin with the person. It has to focus on voice and choice. It needs to have that deeply human element. So right now, I want to compare the two different approaches. I'm going to call the first approach personalized learning, and the second approach adaptive learning. Now, I want to be clear. The line between personalized learning and adaptive learning is blurry. In some contexts, people use the terms interchangeably. In other contexts, people view adaptive learning as a part of personalized learning, and still others view adaptive learning as more an element of customized learning versus personalized. For me, it really comes down to personalized learning being human-centered and adaptive learning being machine-centered. I know it's going to annoy some folks who are big fans of adaptive learning programs. I know that there are going to be some people in the ed tech industry that might disagree with me here, but that's the way I'm kind of thinking about it. So what is the difference? With personalized learning, it is human-driven. Personalized learning might use algorithms to inform design, but it's ultimately focused on the people. Whereas adaptive learning, it's basically students progress through preset curriculum, and the AI adapts the level of difficulty and the activities that students do based on a student's skill level and sometimes elements including maybe student interest. When it comes to the learning tasks, personalized learning really focuses on authenticity. Students engage in authentic problem solving. There are lots of opportunities to do creative work, to think divergently. There's often a connection to a real-world context. With adaptive learning, it's more programmed. The learning tasks are authentic in terms of being real. They might matter to students, But students don't have an opportunity to connect to the larger world, right? If we think about the example I gave, we literally had the internet turned off. They don't get a chance to solve authentic problems. Often what they do is they work on these targeted standards using digital worksheets. The grouping of this also varies. So personalized learning is often collaborative, right? Personalized learning requires students to do interdependent work. And even if they're working individually on, say, a Geek Out blog or a Genius Hour project, they still engage in this peer feedback. On the other hand, adaptive learning focuses on a more individualized approach. So there's not a lot of peer, small group interaction. Students typically here are going to work alone at a computer. And the work is done at their level and at their pace. The assessment looks really different as well. So in personalized learning, students engage in self-reflections, peer feedback, and teacher assessments. They might even use AI, but it's simply one of the multiple options that they're going to use. Whereas the assessment in adaptive learning is much more singular. Students might engage in some self-reflections as an assignment, but it doesn't inform the instruction. The AI is at the heart of the assessment process in adaptive learning. It's fast, it's efficient, students get immediate feedback, and then the algorithm uses that data to adjust the very next learning task. The process with personalized learning tends to be messy, right? There's some structures and scaffolds. You absolutely need to make it structured, but it's gonna look a little bit messy. On the other hand, adaptive learning tends to be very efficient. Students move through the process as fast as possible. You waste very little time. The role of the learner looks a little bit different. With personalized learning, it's all about empowering the learner. They have agency, they have a sense of control, there's some freedom built into it. Again, they are not just making decisions given choices, they are actually forging their own choices and finding their own pathways. Whereas adaptive learning is much more about engaging rather than empowering the learner. It's less about a learner agency and more about providing targeted instruction to them. Students might get choices, but they're provided those choices. They don't really get a voice in the process. The role of the teacher also looks different. In personalized learning, you have the teacher as an active facilitator. You might be kind of a guide on the side, but you're also an instructional designer. You're giving individual feedback. You're pulling small groups. And even within personalized learning, you're going to do direct instruction. You're going to have class discussions. It's going to look a little bit more like a traditional classroom instruction, whereas the role of a teacher is much more of being sort of a distant manager of systems in adaptive learning. You're kind of, I mean, when I did it, honestly, I felt a little bit like I was kind of a babysitter. I felt like I was just a warm body there to make sure people stayed on task. That's not true of every adaptive learning program. And I want to point out that a lot of programs are going to blend together both personalized and adaptive learning programs. Now, again, I want to point out there's nothing inherently wrong with adaptive learning programs. I've seen these programs work really well for certain types of skill practice. And some of it includes, you know, phonics work. It could be world language practice. It could be certain elements of math processes. But I do think we need to be cognizant of the false promise that AI can provide perfect personalized learning. It won't, right? I've seen bold promises that generative AI will be better than a traditional classroom for all students, that it will give students exactly what they need, that there will be no wasted time, no rabbit trails, none of that to worry. And I would argue that's not the goal, right? While there might be a time and a place for this adaptive learning approach, this feels like yet another iteration of this tech-centric model of personalized learning. It feels like it's yet another example of saying, we're gonna let the tech drive the instruction rather than making it human-centered and letting the humanity drive the instruction. And I think that's what true personalized learning looks like. So then the big question is, how do we use AI within personalized learning? Well, here's where it gets kind of exciting. You can do an inquiry-based learning project, and this is very personalized. But as students go through this process, they might use AI for different elements. So let's imagine, for example, that they use ChatGPT. Maybe they're in a class where they're 14 years old, they're middle school, they're doing an inquiry-based learning activity, and the new terms of service for ChatGPT says that with parental permission, a 13 or 14-year-old could use ChatGPT. So they're going to use it in this class. And inquiry-based learning starts out with a provocation. It might be something like, tell me about natural disasters, or after learning about ancient China, what do you wonder about, right? What are you curious about? And students begin to post their wonderings using the sentence frames, I wonder blank. And from there, they create their own questions. And here's where the a tool like ChatGPT becomes so helpful. They begin with their own questions, but then they can ask for additional questions that the ChatGPT could create, right? So this chatbot then gives them some additional questions that they might use. So they have sentence frames, they have sample questions from ChatGPT, and now they narrow it down and begin asking questions. During the research, they can look at sources online, but they can also ask clarifying questions to ChatGPT. They can use it as the starting place of research. So they ask a question about ancient China, they get an answer, they ask a follow-up question, more questions, and then knowing that there's some bias in the chatbot, knowing that there are some challenges in the chatbot, knowing that it's not perfect, they can then do lateral reading. And lateral reading is when they're going to read multiple sources from multiple places to answer their questions. This could be a curation of sources that you have for them, but it could also be something where they're going to find these answers on their own. And then when it comes to, you know, reading about it, when it comes to summarizing their information, they might write a summary up, but they might, you know, take that summary they wrote and use an AI tool like Grammarly to get feedback on their writing. In the end, they're going to create a blog post. They're going to create a podcast in the form of a conversation. You know, they're going to create a video. It's going to be creative, but, you know, ultimately, they're using AI as a tool for learning, right? For asking follow-up questions, for asking clarifying questions to help generate initial questions in the beginning. They're going to use it to summarize some of their research. They're going to use it to expand some of their ideas. And it becomes yet another tool in their arsenal as they engage in this inquiry-based learning. Another example of using AI would be in a choice menu. So if you do an advanced choice menu, you give students options of learning targets to choose from, and then that leads to a second page on a Google form where they can then choose from a curation of resources to learn about and then a finished product. Well, where would they use something like AI? And the answer is in a lot of different areas. So it might be that as they identify how animals adapt to their habitat, they might use AI to, you know, as one of multiple resources. So they have videos they can look at that you've curated. They have some samples they could look at. They have, text that they can read, but they can also ask some of their questions to ChatGPT and get answers, and then ask follow-up questions. And what they're doing is they're developing deeper conceptual understanding. Maybe they're learning about, you know, p-values, and I can explain how a p-value works. And they don't know it; they haven't mastered that learning target. They're struggling. They select that as their learning target. They now move into a place where you've given them resources, examples, things to look at, but they can ask questions, clarifying questions to a chatbot about, hey, what is a p-value? How does it work? What are some examples of p-values in different areas? Now you, as you develop resources, here's what I love. You can actually use ChatGPT to generate some resources of your own. So maybe they're learning about animals and adaptations. You can have the same resource and then use ChatGPT to level the reading for them in multiple levels, right? So it could be at the second grade level all the way up to the eighth grade level, as you're learning about, I don't know, say the rock cycle. As they do that, you could also, you know, use ChatGPT to modify some of those to have examples that might be more relevant to some kids, right? There's a lot of different ways to do this. You might have that same resource done in multiple languages if you have students who are multilingual. So there's a lot of ways you use ChatGPT and other types of AI as a form of augmenting this personalized learning, but not replacing the human element. So in the end, you might use, you know, AI to design the rubric that you'll have within this personalized learning experience, this choice menu. You might have it for, you know, creating assignment directions for their finished product on this choice menu. But they're ultimately making the decisions themselves. And I think that's the key area you want to remember, is it is still human driven. Ultimately, what we're going for is that we want personalized learning to focus on the human connection. We want to focus on the things that make us human and build on those, and then only use the AI in ways that actually amplifies the learning and takes it to the next level. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a huge favor? If you listen to this podcast on, you know, Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, wherever it is, Google Play, I think maybe it's on there. Wherever it is, would you leave a review? That helps other people find this podcast. It gives me valuable feedback as well. I read those reviews. It means a ton to me. So again, would you leave a review and maybe tell a friend about this if you like this podcast? Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.